On this episode, a man whose life has had several incarnations as a police constable, as an ice dance icon, as a choreographer, and as a show performer and producer, among many other things. The 1984 Olympic champion followed it up with an Olympic bronze medal, 10 years later with partner Jane Torvill. He's a 7-time national champion, 4-time world and European champion, with many other important accolades to his credit, including his OBE. I'm thrilled to welcome Christopher Dean.
Hello.
How are you? I'm well, thank you.
I've got to add one more to that as well, father of two.
That was coming up, believe me. Because I wanted to ask you, how does being a father affect the way that you look at the world?
Well, it gives you a completely different perspective, obviously. All those things that you were as a kid and that you remember as a kid, you're the mature one now, and you have to remember what their thoughts and feelings are, and you have to respond to it in kind.
Yes.
Because you were that person once, and so you have to go, you know, you understand that. They're teenagers now, and somebody said to me,
bless you.
And it was quite funny. It says, it's always good to have a dog when you've got teenagers, because somebody's always happy to see you when you get home.
I have two dogs. I'm not sure that's the case. Now, listen, I want to know, you know, working as a choreographer, you were principally the choreographer for you and Jane when you did your programs. I remember talking to, I think, Bobby, and he was telling me about the process for making those costumes for Bolero. Where did you get the inspiration to do the long period of time where you were just moving but not skating on the ice for that program?
The whole music came about. We used it as a warm-up the previous year. And the previous year we were getting ready with something called Barnum, a routine
which I loved.
That we did. Thank you. And during that year, as we get onto the ice, we play Bolero because it seemed to help us with that warm-up. It started slow and it crescendoed and you know, got bigger and bigger. And it was like 18 minutes long, so it was a perfect warm-up for us. And then as Barnum year finished, almost the day after, we're thinking of the next music. And, you know, as we all sat down in a room, Jane and I, and indeed Bobby and Courtney, because they were our sort of confidants, and the music Bolero came up, and everybody will claim that they thought of it, but collectively it came up anyway. And the more that we thought about it, the more original the idea seemed. You know, a single piece of music that didn't have any change of music, because at that time it was all about from a fast to a slow to a medium to a fast. And, you know, in the past, our music, you know, I think the first complete piece that we did was Mac and Mabel.
Yes,
which was
also
an overture,
by the way.
Which had all of that flow, but it was orchestrated in the overture to the musical. And then the following year, we wanted a similar thing, but we were able to reach out to Michael Crawford, actor, comedian, who was in Barnum at the time. And then he introduced us to his MD. And then his musical director got his accompaniment of musicians to give their time up, went into a studio and re-recorded an overture to Barnum. So again, we had this beautiful ebb and flow of music telling the story. And so when it came down to Olympic year, it's, well, what are we going to do? And we can't do anything. We couldn't go back to razor blades and pieces of tape and sticking them back together again. But when we came up with Bolero, the obvious problem was it's 18 minutes long. And yet we wanted to achieve the same effect of starting very small, single instrument and growing to that crescendo, but not with that sudden cut of, you know, you start 2 minutes and then you jump to the last 2 minutes. So we got in touch with another musical director and an arranger, and he sat down and pulled the music apart. Bob Stewart, his name was. And he said, you know, it sounds a simple piece of music, but it's very complex. And to actually achieve this, it took him, you know, a couple of months of working out musically and then indeed with the instruments that we needed to use. And so eventually, you know, for the first few months of it, we just had a piano. he had this honky-tonk piano that he sort of pounded it out mm-hmm. in his fashion that we worked towards, but with a view for it to be orchestrated eventually, which it was. And it was all cutting-edge stuff at the time because we went to a musical studio where they had a machine called a Fairlight.
Okay.
And that is one of the first synthesizers that created, at the time, sounds of music, of orchestrations, of bigger orchestrations and actual instruments. So you sort of programmed in the instrument and we got that. But at the same time, we did add some live musicians like the timpani and then the clarinet and saxophone. They were real instruments, but then everything else was built up on this machine. And so, you know, just when you think about the music, a lot of time and effort went into making that sound an original piece as well.
You know, as I'm watching you describe the music, I see a very particular look on your face, and it's almost as if you're accessing either feeling or color. So when you hear music, are you... do you see movement? Do you see color? Just when you're listening to music, because it's clear from your description mm-hmm. that music's very important to you.
Yeah, well, yeah, movement, yeah. I mean, we always, whenever I hear music, you're always dancing to it
okay.
in your head.
Okay.
That's how it works. Anyway.
Did you study music when you were a kid?
I didn't, no. No, it's that's one of my great loss in life that I feel that if I'd have had that part of... education, it would have been a big benefit. Having said that, I do think I hear music in a different way.
That's what I'm looking at in your face. That's yeah. what I'm talking about.
I mean, I think everybody hears music in a different way, but
I don't know about that.
I think I hear this other melody line, not just a rhythm and a beat,
mm-hmm.
but a melody line too. What the music's saying, harmonize, the harmony of the music.
It's quite wonderful. And you know, when I think about your body of work, of course, I'm friends with Caroline and watched what you've done for Piper and Paul and Paul and his former partner Vanessa Krone. But some of my favorite things, I loved a Stars on Ice show that you did that was I think called Time or something to do with mm-hmm. time. Just the whole idea that it starts with a core thought. And then everything else sort of comes around it. It's kind of how I write. There's a core thought, and everything else sort of comes around it.
Yeah.
And then I want to talk to you about that hat program. I think it was Ilya Kulik who did with a hat going up his arm and down his arm. Where does your inspiration come from in general for things?
you know, the music, when you listen to the music for the first time, there's usually pictures, there's images.
Okay.
And so... I always find that my first thought, the original thought, always seems to be the best thought. And even sometimes when okay. you hear it, you go, no, I can do something more. And you follow this circle around and you find yourself coming back to the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do believe in that, you know, original or that first thought is always a good thought. And the thing is, nothing's really wrong. Nothing's wrong. You can create something. And nobody can say, well, that's not right.
Right.
It's not mathematics.
Yes.
It's originality and it's subjective comments or thoughts about things. And that's, I think that's a good philosophy to have.
Okay.
To say it's not wrong. It's not necessarily everybody's cup of tea, but...
Correct, yeah.
It's my cup of tea.
So when you're watching skating, because you're here at the World Championships... do you, when you're watching skaters, when you're seeing the marriage of the skater to the music, does the music in your own choreography as well tell you what to do? Does it say, this is the footwork, this is the whatever? When I sometimes watch skaters, I look and I go, the footwork doesn't belong there. And as a coach with my little baby skaters, it's always the same thing. The music sort of indicates. Does it to you as well?
Yeah, I think you listen to it and you plot around it. Certainly... competitively anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Competitive skating is very channeled today, mm-hmm. I think. You know, you're listening for this specific, there's the lift, there's the spin, that's a footwork section.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that perspective, I feel it's been boxed in a little bit.
Okay.
But yeah, that's generally how you start to think.
So when you were a young skater, who inspired you? Who was your sort of person you looked up to?
From a skating point of view, John Curry was around at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Moiseev and Malenkov.
They were pretty special. What spoke to you about them?
They looked like dancers. They weren't ice skaters, they were dancers,
mm-hmm.
and performers, and they were statuesque, and they just oozed a sense of, you believe them.
When you were a junior skater, had you already evolved into a position where you had your own identity, or were you thinking of, gee, I'm going to assume Minnikoff's identity and sort of try and get there? When you were a young skater, what were you thinking?
Standing up on the ice, basically.
Good call. Caroline talks about beating you just the once, and it's her claim to fame.
I think we looked at other, we would see other skaters and go, wow. But I think you develop your own style. And as we started to get more and more into the skating and more into the choreography, actually Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers was high on the list,
mm-hmm.
of, you know, when you were absorbing all different styles, it was that old classic, easy kind of flow that he had as a dancer,
mm-hmm.
that made it look so sophisticated and easy at the same time. So he was a big influence. But then as we progressed, obviously, I got more and more into dance, contemporary dance, classical dance, but more into the contemporary dance and what was happening on the scene.
I loved the program that you did for Isabel and Paul Duchesne that was, I don't know what you called it, but it was mirrors, like they were a mirror reflection of each other.
Yeah.
I think that it was risky and it wasn't necessarily well understood at the time. But is this the sort of flair for modern dance that you're talking about?
Yeah. Just different perceptions as opposed to, you know.
The standard. Yeah.
Doing a paso doble or a tango or a...
Although if you're going to do paso doble, yours is probably the one we want to do. Let's face facts.
Well, that was the rhythm dance. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was, there was more of a thought process behind that, you know, with the Paul and Isabel particular piece. And, you know, I think it was right for them at the time.
Yeah.
They were, you know, so I think anybody that stands out are people that are pushing the boundaries or at least challenging the perceptions, mm-hmm. as opposed to being safe. And that's a hard thing to do when you're the champions. You think, well, do we try and be original again?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we go to that place that we know that we can do? And I think that's what Jane and I always did, is that we tried to reinvent ourselves each year.
That was a real challenge, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, we won in 1981, and the goal was to go to 1984. So 4 years of trying to stay at the top was the challenge.
Yes, it would have been.
And that's what inspired us, I think, to be creative and original each year. I mean, and I see that with the French couple now, you know, that they have a style.
Mm-hmm.
They're wonderful and beautiful and sublime. But I think they may have to start thinking about
reinventing
themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, if I think like everybody, when you've seen something, you go, oh, "That's beautiful," and then the next year you maybe want to see something else. So, what are you presenting to us this year?
Yes.
And so I think that's what they may need to think about seriously to sustain.
Mm-hmm.
To the next Olympics.
Because it feels like it's around the corner, but in fact there's a whole other season and a half to get through, which is a very long time.
Absolutely.
So it's not, and you're right, they beautiful lines, beautiful movement, great power and speed, but last year's free dance in many ways reminded me of this year's free dance.
Mm-hmm.
Love them both, absolutely. And obviously they were winning for both, but do you see any other ice dance kind of since your time that sort of interested you along the way?
Well, I think Paul and Piper.
Yes, I love watching them.
They're always trying to be original and creative. You know, I'll get into trouble if I start talking about free dancers, because I think all the rules and regulations that they have now in place for both the short dance and the free dance, I think they should just concentrate it on the short dance.
Okay.
Let people do their spins, their footwork.
Their technical stuff.
Their technical stuff. Because they all look the same. You know?
Yep.
All the boys have to do a spread eagle to get greater a difficult way of going to a lift, a difficult way of getting out of the lift. They're spinning the girls around the neck. How many times do we see it? Almost every program.
Yes, and lots of standing on thighs now.
Standing on thighs is the
de rigueur.
That's what you have to do to get level 4. And so, yeah, I mean, and it's been around for a decade.
Yeah.
And how often can you keep changing it, mm-hmm. and finding something new? It's difficult, you know. You've only got 4 limbs.
Yes.
And that's how you do it. And then
each 4 limbs each.
Yeah. Well. Well, I think all the combinations have been used up. Keep that for the short dance or an original dance.
I'd love to see original dance again, actually.
And then give us a free dance where, let's say, you can only do 4 lifts. And everything else, there's no rules and regulations.
It's a performance piece.
Well, it's a performance piece, but every routine will start to look different again.
Yes.
Because every routine at the moment is looking very similar.
A lot of them.
There's
yep.
a change of music, but the actual elements, we know that the twizzles, we're going to have 3 sets of twizzles, arms in the air, your legs out, your legs in, you slightly plied. Got one couple that can do it in a deep lunge, that's the only couple. and then the lifts, you know, it just starts to be predictable, as opposed to a free dance that's, okay, there's the blank canvas.
I love that idea, actually, mm-hmm. to tell you the truth, because it would be very interesting to watch. I wonder sometimes, though, if that becomes more difficult for judges to evaluate, because some of them don't have what I call the artistic vocabulary to really understand what they're looking at all levels.
You know what? And it's like pictures on a wall, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Does that sing to you?
Yes.
Does that please you? What does that one look like?
That is the risk, actually, in all skating, mm-hmm. is trying to find something that pleases the person who's looking at things.
Yeah.
Do you think, it's interesting, when I watch iconic programs, we'll call them, and I hear somebody take the music and try and do something, somebody else take the music, very few people can duplicate. So Kurt Browning owns Casablanca. It doesn't matter how many other people try and use it. I want to say, that's Kurt Browning's music. Mm-hmm. When I hear Bolero, the only person who's been able to sort of do something to it that I really liked was Carolina Costner. But if anybody else uses Bolero, I just want to say, that's not your music. Do you feel that you own the music? Do you know what I mean by that?
Well, I think people identify.
That's probably the better word.
As with the music, you know. We used it, as you say, it became popular. It became popular in the UK. It went to number 9 in the pop charts that
did it really?
Year. Yes. We have a platinum disc on our walls because of it. I think there are those moments that people's music you identify with. I mean, it's you don't own it, but then you have to be confident enough that you can then go out and say to people, this is my take on this.
Yes.
And I feel good about this. As opposed to somebody trying to copy something.
Yes.
I think you have to have your own original idea for it.
Are there any iconic programs that you enjoyed watching over the years? Or any programs? I'm not going to say iconic, then I'm attributing my particular take on things.
You know, I think you think back to John Curry's Don Quixote. That was amazing. Yeah.
He came to Toronto to skate when I was a skater and skated in the summertime. So I remember seeing him when I was young. I mean, even then.
Yeah, no, he just exuded presence, didn't he?
Absolutely.
He was unassuming off the ice.
Did you ever meet him?
Oh, yeah, many times. But when he actually came on the ice, There was just a persona that seemed to come out of him, and a style. You know, he was the Baryshnikov of ice.
It was commanding without being brash.
Yeah, and no, he was understated and subtle, but everything was perfect.
And what about Paris? Have you ever watched Paris? Do you ever watch Paris?
I do, and you know, I'm quite happy with what they're up to at the moment. You know, they're doing more than just skating around, back crossovers, having to do lifts. And they do have the requirements. Again, I'd like to see them to be able to do. I think they're being very creative in what they're doing. I think the dancers are actually doing better spins than the pairs at the moment.
I think they are too.
But I think there's some amazing pairs out there. But you know, you harken back to Rodney and the Zaitsev.
I've never seen my goodness
anybody skate around the ice quite as fast as they did.
She was really quite, and it's for such a small person too. When you think about
a pocket rocket.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I went to Worlds once sort of as a teenager and they were competing and you just sort of, it was astonishing. Yeah. You know, that kind of speed is astonishing.
Yeah.
Tell me what you love about choreography.
Well, it's the expression of what you're trying to do on the ice. It's a love-hate thing.
Okay, tell me the love, tell me the hate.
Well, the love is, if it's successful, you're kind of proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the process can be frustrating.
How do you get to the essence of the skater? Because it's very difficult to have a skater assume choreography that is not.
I think there are two types of skater: the skater that you work with their style, and then there's the skater that can interpret what you're trying to say.
Okay, and how do you know which one's which? Can you tell very quickly?
Well, they can't do what you're asking them to do.
That was a nice way of putting that.
They do their interpretation of it.
I've met choreographers along the way, figure skating choreographers, who like to check back in with the skaters for tweaking. And I've also met choreographers who get quite upset if the original choreography is changed. How do you feel about either of those things?
You know, in this world that we live in, the travel, the distance, wherever it may be. I think if you're on hand all the time and you can be a part of it, you can definitely oversee it and keep on top of it and evolve with it. But a lot of the times people are coming in for a session, you know, for a period, and then they go. And you have to allow them to evolve it as well.
Okay.
Sometimes you do it and it's more of a sketch than it is the final version. But if you're able to spend the time and be with them on a regular basis, and then you mold it with them as well.
How long does it take to choreograph a freedance, or does it depend on the skaters, senior freedance?
Yeah, it depends on the flow.
Okay.
Depends on them. You know, it can be 3 days, it can be 3 weeks.
And does it always start from an idea in your head of what you'd like to see them do?
Yeah, usually it's, you know, I like to have the music and then absorb it for some time. You sort of have to bathe yourself in it and feel it and the nuances of it and build pictures that then give you the dialogue or movement dialogue that you want to happen.
Are there any other kinds of artistic things that interest you that you would have pursued had you not been a skater?
I love movement and dance. You know, I love watching street dance or kids doing what they do, because it flows from something quite organic. When you go on Facebook, you see something called tops dancers.
Oh, I've not seen that.
And they're, people post their little videos.
Yeah, I love them.
They're just original. It's there and then. It's current. I love some of that stuff.
It's kind of raw.
It's raw, unrefined. You know, it's not produced in any way, but there's something quite lovely you can see it hasn't been stylized and hasn't been
ironed
processed
out,
and
in a way.
Of that. It's just, it's almost watching, you know, tribal dancing. It's some origin to it.
I love actually, do you like folk music of any kind?
Some.
Any particular rhythms that are, like I love, for instance, Kodo drummers from Japan.
Yeah, Kodo drummers.
They just really get me right in the heart.
I love the pan pipes from South America.
Yeah, I do too.
I love Irish music. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Irish music has a real soul to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people say, what's your style? I say, I'm generic. If the music sings, then
it doesn't really matter.
Works. Yeah.
I have to tell you a strange thing. I listen to music, and I don't love to go see live music frequently because often they change what I like.
Mm-hmm.
So I like one piece and I'll listen to it over, a bit obsessive that way, over and over and over again. And then you go to see it live and they've decided to sort of jazz it up, and I get really quite frustrated by it because what I want is what I already have.
Yeah, original so, that's resonated in your head.
That's right. Yeah. You don't want to know what's resonating in my head. Listen, one last question, and I just would like you to please complete the sentence for me, and that is skating is...
Skating is my life.
You know what? That's perfect. Christopher Dean, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Off to the gym.
I'll do my very best.